From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Good evening, this is Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida. Our producer, Brian Charlson, is among us as well. Brian, glad to have you with us. Our erstwhile recordist, Mr. Steve Bauer, is off doing other things, but is in fact recording for the purpose of editing. So thank you very much for all you do, Mr. Bauer. Obviously, our program would not exist were it not for George Buys and Talking Communities. And so, as usual, I'd like to express my appreciation to George for his assistance. We're using a brand new version of the Talking software, which many of us have just downloaded this evening. So change is happening. This evening, we're going to talk about a subject that ought to be of concern to many of us who are blind, and I think is of concern, and it relates to Braille. There's been a lot of attention paid to Braille over this month because at the beginning of the month, we celebrated the 200th anniversary of the birth of Louis Braille. Louis Braille was born on January the 4th, 1809, in a little town in France called Couvray. There's been an awful lot written about Louis Braille, and an awful lot that has been said about him. He went from not being very well recognized as a person while he was alive to one who has certainly joined the status of the pantheon of heroes, pun intended, in France. He's also certainly revered by all of us who are blind as inventing the language that we use to read, and the one that has, in the long run, proven to be perhaps by far the best system that has ever been devised for us to read. In looking at Louis Braille, there's also been a lot of discussion about Braille itself and about the future that Braille may or may not have. One of the things that's come up on this program frequently is what appears to be something of a generation gap. That is, there don't appear to be as many young people learning Braille as used to learn it, and those who do learn it don't tend to use Braille as much as our generation of folks did, or at least that appears to be evidential based on lots of, I guess it's not absolutely statistical evidence, but certainly lots of cases that I run across as director of services to students with disabilities at a community college. So tonight, what I thought we would do is spend some time talking about Louis Braille, spend some time talking about some of the resources that have emerged concerning Louis Braille over the last little while, and then perhaps as well talk about where the system of communication that he invented is in fact going, and whether we need to be concerned about some of those directions. So tonight we don't have a specific guest, and what I thought we would do is take things in a variety of directions, and I thought that perhaps the first one might be to talk a little bit about Louis Braille and some of what has emerged over the past few months. One of the folks who's here really has a perspective that we will in the future talk a lot more about, but for now I'd like him just to share a little of what he noted, because Brian Charlson was actually early in January in Paris attending a conference that was intended to celebrate the 200th anniversary of Louis Braille's birth. And Brian, I don't so much want you to talk about the conference, but more, could you talk a little about how you perceive that Louis Braille is perceived in France? Does he have the heroic status there among the folks who you talked with that we accord him in this country? Or is the attitude towards him somewhat different? What do you think, Mr. Brian?
The French are extremely proud, both within the blindness community and at large, that Louis Braille was a Frenchman. To such a degree that he was disinterred from his original burial place in Couvray and reburied at the Pantheon, which is a cemetery in Paris that is reserved for heroes. I should say not all of him was interred there. Apparently they made a special type of arrangement for the remains of Louis' hands to stay in Couvray at his original burial place. But absolutely he is revered in all of France. And in fact, one of the speakers at the conference, if memory serves me correctly, he was from Saudi Arabia, indicated that much of the attitude of the blind from around the world about the French that is positive can be directly attributed to the fact that Louis was a Frenchman. And he thanked the French people for having shared his invention and efforts with the rest of the blindness world. So absolutely, he is revered. You know, it's interesting, though, that in France they revere people differently than they do in many other parts of the world that I've visited. And that is, reverence did not mean that they went and used public dollars to keep his birthplace in good order and make of it a shrine. Rather, it was allowed to fall into great decay and is only being revived, and I say being because it's still in process. It's a very nice place at this time, but it's nowhere near what it really ought to be and is not well financially endowed to perpetuate into the future. But none of the dollars that have gone into it have been government dollars, only private donations. At least that was what was said to me while I was there.
Yes, and in fact, there have been allocations from the World Blind Union, and certainly ACB has contributed some in the past to the survival of the house at Couvray, as have a number of other organizations, including the National Federation of the Blind, which has actually put quite a substantial sum of money into making that happen. One of the good things they've done, I think. I actually did participate in a birthday party for Louis Braille that was held by our public library system, and it was a nice event. I had the opportunity of talking a bit about Louis Braille's life and what I thought his impact was, which is one of the reasons that we've gotten to this program. So what is the state of Braille these days? Is it a universal solution for the literacy problems of blind people, and as such, is it being embraced? What do folks think?
Hello, everybody. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I feel that the state of Braille is not what it should be. I think that, as I've heard before, that maybe if more students learn Braille, that might help the situation better, because they say that maybe those people who are employed in any kind of work, most of them have learned Braille, and that might be a bar to employment for those who The fact that they don't know Braille, maybe, is the thing. And I'm glad that I learned it throughout my years in school, from 47 on up to 1960. I've had to use it, and I think it's very important. I'm afraid that maybe the kids today aren't getting the training that they need to have to learn Braille, and they're not using it as they should be using it. Probably, at least that's my summation.
Paul, I want to intercede here for a moment, because you used the term in your introduction that I would like to ask you a question about. Do you believe that Braille is a language or a code?
If I use the term language, I didn't intend to. I think it's a form of communication. I don't think it's a language. I think it is often perceived by folks who don't know Braille as a language, but I absolutely would concur that it is a form of communication and a code. I'm surprised that I managed to slip language in there. I don't usually speak so imprecisely. Nevertheless, other folks with their thoughts on the state of Braille.
Actually, I don't mean to be disagreeable, but I think Braille is a language, and I'll try to explain why. I was typing something the other day, and for some reason, I hit the letter A on my keyboard and kept typing, when what I meant to type was the number 1. In Braille, they are identical. In print, they have no relation to each other. When I think in Braille, like for the word today, what I visualize is not T-O-D-A-Y. It's T-D. It's a very different, very spatially different and writing different. When I was a kid, kind of thought it was cool. I could write things in a secret code or language my parents couldn't read. I could write whatever I wanted and sometimes did. But to me, it very much is a language that I don't share with my sighted family or peers.
But it becomes a language because we have learned to use it, and that's what we understand. But I think in the beginning, it seems to me, I would say that it is more of a code and a key to learning language, probably, but it's more of a code in the beginning of it.
Mr. Bryan, do you think Braille is a language?
While I have the utmost respect for Braille, it is as a code, in that a language has a particularly unique syntax to how words are laid out. American Sign Language has a unique syntax, and therefore I'm willing to accept that it is in fact a language and not a code. But Braille does not have a unique syntax. It follows the syntax of the language that is being written, rather than having one of its own. So that's what differentiates it to me. I know that frequently people talk of it as a language. It was just this past week that my wife, who's the director of the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library and ACB's representative to the Banner Braille Authority of North America board, and a school out in California, or actually a legislator from the California legislature, wanted to see about introducing a law that declared Braille as a language, and BANA has in fact taken an official stand that it is not a language, it is a code. It is a code that is to that holds an important place in the lives of blind and visually impaired users of the code, but it is a code and not a language. Paul, the other aspect of this is there were times when, in order to justify taking me in my youth out of Spanish class so they'd have more time to teach me Braille, my teachers referred to it as a language. And to this day, one of my biggest personal disappointments is I never did get training in a second language. I'm strictly a monolingual kind of person. Also, I've seen individuals attempt to use Braille as a language when filling out job applications. And while I think it is and can be a valuable job tool, it can't be used as a means to communicate over the telephone to individuals who do not speak English or the prominent language in the culture. And therefore, I think we've kind of done ourselves a disservice by allowing this melding of the two terms, code and language.
Well, 13513, Brian. I don't know. I certainly see what Monica is driving at. I don't know that I would go as far as she does. I think that Braille clearly is more than, say, shorthand in that it is a relatively unique code that, for the most part, is specific to a group of people. And there are certainly times when we communicate using Braille, even when we speak, in ways that are entirely different from the way that we would communicate were it simply a transposition of letters into other things. And numbers are a good example. 414-4935. Most of us who read Braille, if we saw that number, would immediately say, oh, how cool, Dad Dice. Whereas most folks who utilize traditional numbers would never think of remembering a phone number in that way. It would simply not occur to them at all. I know I've always thought it would be very cool to try to get a seven-letter word as a phone number. So far, I haven't been able to do it in my life, but maybe it'll happen before I die. I think it would be great to be able to say to somebody, oh, my number is fibbed or something. Anyway, beyond the question of whether it's a language or a code, let's get back to the more general question. Is the state of Braille something we should be concerned about? And we've heard from Brian a little, and we've heard from Gary. Is there someone else who'd like to jump in and comment on whether we think Braille is healthy?
Yeah, this is Mary from California. I don't think it is as healthy as we would all like for a couple of reasons. One is that there is such a huge emphasis on talking this and talking that and speech synthesizers and talking computers and use your speech for this and that and the other that I suspect that a lot of sighted people think that the great solution for blind people is talking gadgets. And it's overwhelming in the press. I hear it all the time in the news and stuff. And I find it very, very disturbing. The other big, big, big problem is that, from what I understand, in university graduate programs, people who want to work with blind people and be teachers are not learning Braille, and if they are, they're not learning it well enough to teach it and be competent in it. I think those are two of the big problems that are contributing to the lack of health of Braille, and I'm sure there are other things that people can think of, but these are the two that come to mind.
This is Steve Bauer from Wichita, Kansas. I've been a Braille reader since I was in the second grade, and I think Braille has been in trouble for years, and I believe that the reason it's in trouble is because of the attitude toward Braille by sighted people. I think Braille scares some of them, even those that may know a little bit about it. I know that many years ago, I would take a Braille magazine with me to work, and after I ate lunch, I'd go sit on one of the couches over in the corner of the cafeteria to read, but I couldn't. Because so many people were so curious, because they just couldn't look at my magazine and know what I was reading, they had to ask about it. It drove them nuts. And so I think the attitude of sighted people, not all sighted people, but some, is that they are scared of it. And so to avoid something they're scared of, they don't want to teach it. They don't want to promote it. I've heard a statistic that 90% of people who are blind or visually impaired that are gainfully employed are Braille readers. I've seen many people at conferences and meetings, some blind people that are very qualified, very knowledgeable, very talented, try to do presentations, and they use electronic note takers and things with little Braille displays, and they fail miserably because that technology doesn't perform properly. They're putting more effort into trying to make it perform and display their information, where if they just would have made some Braille notes, they could have done a fantastic presentation. Braille has a lot of power, and I'll take it back to when I learned Braille in the second grade. I could still see, but fortunately, I had a teacher that was very wise, and she went to my parents and basically told them that I was spending more energy trying to see what was on the paper than learning, and that's why I needed to learn Braille. And so often parents, here again, their attitude toward Braille is not positive. They feel that if their child learns Braille while they can still see, that that's failure. Where in reality, it would be a step towards success if they were to learn it. Advocacy needs to continue to try to get more people thinking positively about Braille, how it can be used, how it can be taught, and how it can make or break a person in their work career, in their personal life, whatever role they live in. Braille has got to be there and has got to be used.
Hello, this is Danny. Just want to say a couple little things, and thanks for your observation, Steve. I don't read Braille as fluently as maybe I should, but I do use it. And I remember one time I wrote an article, well, a short little thing for somebody at my college where I used to be many, many, many years ago before the Internet. And I got a word spelled wrong. And he wrote me and said, why can't you use a dictionary like anybody else? And he probably didn't realize I was blind. I wrote him back and I said, well, you want to buy me a Braille dictionary? It's a whole bunch of volumes. But I didn't hear back from him. But a lot of people don't realize how much space Braille takes up. But by the same token, people that can see don't realize that we need Braille, even if we don't use it every single day. We need it because it shows us how to spell things and how to do things that we should. And one more thing, and I'll cut the mic off. And this may be off topic, and if it is, I apologize. I wish that people would take a serious look at NUBS, which is the Nemeth Universal Braille System, because I think that Dr. Nemeth had some darn good ideas, and it's a lot better, I think, than that thing that Banna's trying to do now with that, whatever they call it now, this new code they're trying to promote.
I think they're talking about the English Braille Code or Universal Braille or something. Well, I don't use Braille as much as I used to. I don't read a lot of books that way, and more probably it'd be on tape, and I'm busy on the computer to read things that way. But I do take notes with slate and stylus when I need them, and note takers are good. But I write phone numbers in Braille and things like that, and glad I have learned it and use it. And of course, the problem with Braille in the beginning, I think, well, no, you go back to when mainstreaming started out pretty much in the 70s and maybe before that. Some of the people were saying that, well, give them a tape recorder and they can listen to it that way or something like that. That I don't know if that's a generality, but I think that's what people felt. And so that's why they don't use it so much. But I think that kids need to learn Braille, and it's what everybody has said. You can't really learn how to spell if you don't have the read the words. If you just listen to them, you don't really know how to spell, and you need Braille to know how to use a dictionary, to know how to spell words and the meanings and things, to look things up. Of course, I suppose they have computer dictionaries, but they use voice with the screen readers and all that. But I think that if you're reading something with a computer, I think even if you're not reading Braille, there's a certain amount of skill to be able to go to chapters and things like that, well, like you can with Bibles and things. But like for me to go to a certain chapter in my Bible, I'd have to run fast forward on the tape to find a specific chapter, where with a computer I could do that. And my King James Version of the Braille Bible was 18 books, big books, back when I was in 55 when I was 13, I suppose. And one time they were kidding me at work that I didn't have anything special to do. I was reading something, probably Reader's Digest or something, Tilda Ziegler, and one of the supervisors says, "There's Gary reading his Playboy again."
I think that that everyone has a good point about the necessity of Braille. I think Steve has a point that sighted people don't understand its value. But the other Achilles heel that I see with Braille is its cost. Its cost in production earlier, but now its big cost is the embossers, the Braille displays, and note takers. I just bought a laptop for myself. I got it for $400. It's a great laptop, and it talks. I can't buy a Braille note taker for that, as much as I may want to. I can't buy a Braille display for that either. So it's one of those things. I think it's a complex issue, but the cost, I mean, I have read Braille since I was 3 years old, but I can't afford a Braille display. It just isn't in the budget.
Yeah, this is Darsen LePan, and my experience with Braille has been very interesting. I'm not a Braille reader, unfortunately. My first schooling took place at the Oregon State School for the Blind back in the mid to late 40s, and because I did have a little bit of sight, I was taught to read with large print. And over the years, I've tried to learn Braille a couple different times, and I was able to learn it intellectually. I knew at one time what dots were, particular letters and punctuation and so forth. My difficulty was learning to develop the reading of it. And therefore, I guess since I'm sort of lazy, I just didn't put the effort into it because of all the Audible stuff that is available. And I did use print for many years. I was sort of taught, in a sense, to pass for being sighted for many, many, many years. And that's real unfortunate. I've been able to change that in a lot of ways, but not so much in learning Braille. And I admit I don't, other than I heard somebody say that they take notes in Braille. Well, I do the same thing. If periodically I might have to give a talk or something. And so as long as I write it with a slate and stylus, then I know what it says, and it will be sort of a cheat sheet for me. But to read something I haven't written, it's very, very slow. And I have a feeling that that is still going on with little kids that have sight. I don't know that for sure. Most of the people I communicate with, blind people, probably are 50-ish and older, thereabouts, maybe 40 and older. And most of them do know Braille, and I'm really envious. So I think that's unfortunate if that is still being done.
Little Louis lost his sight in his papa's workshop in the town of Coupley Falls. The saddle maker's all that pierced his eye, and time would help the blind to read and write. For the soldiers of Napoleon's war, the tactile night reading code was born. And Capitaine Barbier showed young Louis when the war was through, who modified it finger-sized to the six dots we all use. Merci, Louis. Thank you, Louis Braille. We honor you each day with a world of reading hands. Six magic dots are the keys to the locks that free the blind to read. Je te remercie, Louis Braille. I said thank you, Louis Braille.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you're listening to Tuesday Topics. We're talking about Braille and reflecting on the life and the accomplishments of Louis Braille. Our discussion will continue in a moment.
Dearest Louis, I wish you were here to touch your gift of genius everywhere, to look about you at the blind of the world, empowered proud men, women, boys, and girls.
just like in your day. Some say we don't need Braille, but we are millions strong, singing loud and clear. Viva Louis, viva Braille. Merci Louis, thank you Louis Braille. We honor you each day with a world of reading hands. Six magic dots are the keys to the locks that free the blind that you read. Je dis merci Louis Braille. I said, thank you, Louis Braille. Merci, Louis. Thank you, Louis Braille. We honor you each day with a world of reading hands. Six magic dots are the keys to the locks that free the...
Once again, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
I think the points that folks have made are certainly significant, and they describe a lot of other folks. I'm also fascinated by Monica's notion. I think there are two ways to view Braille costs. One of them is that in the past, it was extremely expensive to produce Braille books, and there were very few of them produced. Now, once you have an embosser, or once an embosser is available, it's relatively inexpensive to produce Braille materials. I didn't think I'd ever get to the stage that I am now, where I'm actually prepared to throw Braille away sometimes, because there actually is a pretty fair chunk of Braille that's available, and it's pretty easy to reproduce the Braille if I need it again. So even though embossers are beyond the cost of most individuals, Braille production is certainly less centralized than it's ever been, and there's probably the ability to produce far more Braille and to produce darn near anything in Braille that one wants to. I think, for instance, of the fact that one of the features in Bookshare allows anyone, whether a member or not, to order an embossed copy of any book that's on Bookshare if you're prepared to pay for it. Now, it's somewhat expensive, but I think it is a hugely different world we live in, where Braille materials are for the first time widely available if we want to use them. I also believe that Braille displays, even though they are expensive, and I'd be the first to acknowledge that, Braille displays have enabled us to read almost anything in Braille for the same cost as it would take to read a book using speech. And that's a huge change, because that was never the case before Braille displays came along. So clearly, one of the things that at least I perceive is it is ironic to me that Braille seems to be declining at a very time where, for the first time in its history, it truly does make information widely available to people who are blind, which they've never had access to before. I do agree with Steve that the sighted world has had a tremendous impact on Braille, but I guess I'm going to ask us to perhaps move beyond theory to practice. If we believe that Braille is important, and if we believe that it needs to survive, what do we need to be doing to make that happen?
Yeah, this is Mary. I am an avid supporter of Braille displays. I've had them since around 1990, mostly for use at work. during which people would come by my office and just watch me work because my screen was never turned on unless somebody actually had to look at something or if I had to look at something with the opticon, which I won't even talk any more about that. But the Braille display was my main device, and people would come by and wonder what in the world I was doing. But actually, I was reading the screen, absolutely everything, with a Braille display, and I still do. And also, I have a PacMate with a Braille display attached to it. And you're right, reading Braille, especially you've got Bookshare, you've got Web Braille, you've got, my goodness, just about anything on the web that you want to save as a file and read in Braille is just totally available. And it's really a shame that Braille displays don't cost less. But I'm not going to get into that, but we've already talked about it. I think one of the big things that we need to do is just make it more public. One of the ACB affiliates, which I belong to for years and years since they were first founded, the Braille Revival League is emphasizing that all the time, is it has to be made more public. I know that in some places, the elevators and all of the, even McDonald's, the lids on the cups are marked in Braille, and it just needs to be more available so that people can see that it really does exist and it's really no big mystery. And I think that's one of the big things that we can all do.
I think that Braille has to be in our built environment, things like elevators and room names and those kinds of things. It needs to be available upon request in restaurants. Menus need to be available in Braille. Patrons, sighted patrons, have to see blind patrons of restaurants perusing the menu just like they're doing with the print. It needs to be readily available in places where you need access to information suddenly and temporarily, such things as medical information. All those things we're expected to sign and all that literature we're handed for our better health that we then get to go try to find some way to access. It needs to be in all of those places so that it isn't perceived by the populace in general as being a thing of the past, but a thing of the present. Garrison Keillor, during one of his commentaries, indicated that Braille was a thing of the past, and it took us more than a year to get his attention enough that on Louis Braille's 200th birthday, he acknowledged that Braille is alive and a vital means for blind and visually impaired people to access information. Again, that public perception is all important because the public are our mothers and fathers, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, employers, fellow citizens, next door neighbors. And if they believe that it's useless, then when they're in a position to have an impact on the life of a blind or visually impaired person, they're not going to bring it into the equation. And I think that will do them a disservice.
This is Pam Drake in Visalia, California. And it's always been my thought that, especially as an adult, with the availability of the Braille displays and electronic note takers and just the technological revolution, that the salvation of Braille, if you will, and maybe that's putting it a little too heavily, I can, for lack of a better word, I think Braille displays, I think soft copy Braille or hard is going to be, refreshable Braille is going to be what's going to keep it going. I admit, we have gotten rid of most of the Braille in our house because we just can't, especially the magazines. We have our books. I have quite a collection. But we just don't have room for all these monthly magazines. People are downsizing. People are getting into apartments. But with web Braille, and, of course, the embosser and the ability to emboss Braille, I think it needs to be made smaller. And the only way to do that, or the quantity made a bit less massive, is to use as much refreshable Braille, and then we have the option of converting it into hard copy Braille. And believe me, I'm glad I know Braille, because I know of some, and talking about the issue of language, I know some pretty difficult, some people have a pretty hard time spelling, because all they know is the contractions. Unfortunately, they weren't taught good spelling, or they just didn't use it. And I think that is a problem, so we have to have a mixture. But we certainly need our Braille, and I believe technological revolution could actually save Braille if it is used properly.
One quick thing, I think that the problem we have is that mechanical things such as slates and styluses and Braille writers are so darned expensive. People that can see can just go out and buy a pen or a pencil, and we have to fork out $20 for a slate and stylus. That's kind of crazy.
I think to ensure Braille's future, the other thing that would be important to do is attack the technology donut. And what I mean by that is, if you have a high-paying job, you can afford Braille technology. If you are a student or actively getting help from Voc Rehab, on the bottom end, you can afford, you can get Braille technology from the state. If you are in the middle, i.e. you are either underemployed or, as I am, I'm a business owner, there's not a lot of assistance in getting Braille technology. Do you guys realize that a PacMate costs more than the braces that I got on my daughter's teeth? And you go into Hawk for those. For braces, you pay for 2 years. You make payments. But most adaptive technology companies that make Braille devices do not have payment plans. I think this is an issue, which is why I'm coming back to it. I see it as a donut, and I'm thinking there's got to be a way to narrow the gap between who can get technology for refreshable Braille and who can't. And if that's not crossed, then speech will continue to gain because it is inexpensive.
That is a very good point, and I've noticed that. I went to a convention, my first convention this summer, and I thought that the refreshable Braille items were really wonderful things, but there's no way in the world that I'm going to afford that. And I dare say most of us are in that bracket.
So I'm hearing some people say that technology may save Braille, and I'm hearing some people say that technology may be killing it. And it's probably a difficult question to answer, but we're still relatively short on practical solutions. Obviously, one of the things that we ought to continue to do, and maybe it's something that we ought to really make a priority. We hear talk every year or two that we are right at the point where a truly inexpensive Braille display is going to hit the market, where a company has finally made that ultimate breakthrough, and we're actually going to end up with affordable Braille displays. I don't know if we truly ever will get there, and I don't know either whether there's as much incentive for people to be working on the problem, given what appears to be the decline in the number of people who are using Braille. And so I guess one of the issues that's out there for us is, how do we deal with what appears to be the reality of Braille at the moment? And that reality is that there are currently fewer Braille readers, and the number declines every year. I think were we to talk to the National Library Service, we'd find the same thing is happening with Braille readers. Hard copy Braille readers, to a degree not as much web Braille users, because I think that is a group that's growing, but borrowers of Braille materials from NLS, I think, continue to decline. And that suggests that older people who truly regard Braille as valuable and important and something that we would use are at the moment either not borrowing as much because of what Pam talks about in terms of bulk, or perhaps, unfortunately, are moving on to a place where Braille reading is just not an option. Are there other really practical things that we can do that will promote the survival of Braille? I'll throw one out there. I really think that we ought, as a blindness community, to say to the government, we want a single massive research project to be started that will finally produce a relatively inexpensive Braille display. So that's one thing that we can legitimately do to help Braille survive. We've passed laws that say that Braille is supposed to be taught to kids in schools unless it is absolutely determined that it will never have any relevance. But the fact is those laws are honored in the breach rather than being obeyed. So any other suggestions of specific actions that we can take that will make the survival of Braille more likely?
I think that what you just mentioned would be really essential, because remember that deafblind people really have no other option than Braille. That's the only medium they've got right now as far as communicating with each other and reaching out to the world. And I think that they especially would benefit from an expensive communication device that was an essential Braille display with perhaps print equivalent letters on the other side of it, kind of like the old teletouch devices.
I have two suggestions very quickly. One being, what about a program of active mentorship where a blind adult teams up with, say, a blind teenager, or parents of a child who has just gone blind, to teach Braille, to talk about Braille and its importance? Perhaps the mentorship would encourage the young person, like I know a teenage boy I talk with who says, oh, Braille just takes longer to read. Perhaps I need to spend more time helping him adapt to Braille and not just depending on speech. My other suggestion is perhaps we could advocate for more of a tax incentive for people in the technology donut, so that some of the cost of a display could be offset by a tax exemption. Maybe that would help some of the people in the middle be able to afford Braille technology. Because I think technology could kill or cure Braille. I think it could go either way.
One way to encourage the use of Braille, as just for your restaurants, to be encouraged to have the Braille menus like some of them do, and maybe they should be encouraged to, or else someone with a Braille printer could print out these menus for those restaurants. Maybe that would be a good thing to do, you know, to encourage patrons to be able to read the menus.
I guess the other question that I want to put on the table, I'm not sure that we've come up with a definitive list. I think there have got to be more things that we can do, and perhaps someone will jump in and I just manage to beat folks. But the other thing I want to put on the table is, are we to the stage now where blind people themselves are really not, for the most part, promoting Braille? We're a kind of an intriguing group in that virtually everybody on this call, with the exception of Darson, actually reads Braille. But do we think that blindness organizations as a whole and that the blindness community as a whole cares very much whether Braille survives? Are we a tiny subset of people who are Braille users who are now actually not even supported by other blind people in our efforts to try to extend and expand the use of Braille? What do folks think?
I think no. Most blind people don't care that much about Braille these days. And Gary, I agree with you. It would be great to have a Braille menu in every restaurant. The reality is, though, most of us look up the menu from the restaurant on the web before we go, or we use web-enabled smartphones and read the menu sitting there to ourselves. I'm not saying it's a bad idea to put Braille in restaurants. I think it's great. But like at Ruby Tuesdays, even though I know they have a Braille menu, every time I go in there, the waiter is like, oh, I don't know if we have one of those. I have to get the manager, and 20 minutes later, I get my menu. So it's easier just to load it on the web, read it before I go, or read it on my cell phone and be done.
I think that if blind people aren't supporting Braille, we need to persuade them to. I don't think that people actively mean to oppose it, and it's sort of like it's as American as apple pie, Braille is. And frankly, I think sighted people believe that Braille is more important to us and more relevant to us than it actually is, because they really do associate Braille with blind people rather than some of the technologies that we know are now more widespread. So that's an advantage that I think we can take advantage of when we're looking at trying to sell the future of Braille. But I do think we need to proselytize with blind people as well as proselytizing with sighted folks, because I think, frighteningly enough, blind people may be the enemy as well. Let me open it for final thoughts on the future of Braille, if folks have some, or if you wish, final comments about Louis Braille. And then after that, I'm going to read at the end of the program a quote from Louis Braille that I ran across in doing research for my little exercise, and the quote absolutely blows me away. Some more comments or final thoughts on where Braille goes from here.
Well, the final thought I might have, and one that I forgot to mention before, that maybe the problem is that people who are in public schools, a disadvantage with mainstream is that the people, the teachers, are not qualified to teach Braille because they don't have the ability, probably, as someone who works in a school for the blind did. And I think that maybe that's where the young people are losing out on that because of the mainstreaming. I could be wrong, and there's some people who are successfully mainstreaming that use Braille, but from what I've heard, that the people in the teachers in public schools are just not qualified to teach it, like the ones at schools for the blind.
I think Braille can be a vital part and a dynamic part of public education. I was fully mainstreamed, and I read Braille very well. I think the biggest thing is to bring the hunger back among the blind people. If the blind people as a group, if we all work and we want it to happen, it can, because we're quite a large community. We have to want it.
Final thoughts? Anyone else?
Brian. Braille is and should be an important part of the life of any person who has the tactile capability of discerning the dots and who cannot, through any means, read print at a speed that makes them competitive in education and employment. It needn't be that they learn Braille for reading a novel. It's labeling goods in your house. It's keeping track of lists of things that are important to keep track of, like medications, these kinds of things. I think that, in fact, technology is going to be the salvation of Braille, because the technologies that are out there make Braille more readily creatable. Our charge as a blindness community is to make sure that we insist that any and all talk about making things accessible to people who are blind or visually impaired includes as a component Braille. Not because it's the least expensive, not because it is used by the majority of people, but rather because it allows for a better understanding of the material being accessed. not just the spelling of it, because if you know the spelling of it, then you know bits and pieces of the words, and you can understand the words better if you have never heard them before by looking at the root of the word and these kinds of things, something that's virtually impossible to do strictly on an auditory basis. So, go Braille. I'm proud to say that I'm a Braille reader. I'm also proud to say that the quality of my Braille reading has been highly supported by technology, whether it's the magazines that I get and read while sitting in the living room watching television. You can get two things done at one time that way. Or the refreshable Braille that allowed me to get faster at reading Braille, because tracking a single line is a great deal easier than tracking multiple lines of Braille. Go Braille, go Louis. Merci, Louis.
Well, I totally agree with that. And one aspect of reading Braille that I think has not been mentioned is that, my goodness, reading poetry in Braille is fabulous, because if you try to read, say, a classic poet, one of the Victorian poets, for example, or even one of the modern ones, you just get a much better feel for how the poem was written, how the lines are divided, and not to mention Braille music also. We have not talked about that. My goodness. Think of all the people who could learn to play things that they would never get to learn how to do otherwise. You know, without Braille music, what would you have? If you're a musician, you could obviously play by ear, but wouldn't it be much better to learn by just reading in Braille?
We're rapidly approaching the end of the program, and I'm going to try to see if I can read Braille one-handed in just a moment. I want to read you a quote that comes from the year 1841, and it is a quote directly from the person who we've been talking about this evening, Louis Braille. "Access to communication in the widest sense is access to knowledge, and that is vitally important for us. If we are not to go on being despised or patronized by condescending sighted people, we do not need pity, nor do we need to be reminded that we are vulnerable. We must be treated as equals, and communication is the way that we can bring this about." Louis Braille, 1841. I think those words are as important and as valuable and as true today as they were in 1841. When I saw the quote, it absolutely blew me away, because clearly Mr. Braille recognized just what a revolution the system that he was creating could in fact bring about. Thanks very much for your participation this evening. If folks would like to send us an email, please do so at TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight and everyone on the production team. Look forward to seeing everyone next week. Go Louis, merci Monsieur Braille, et aussi lire beaucoup. Good night, everyone.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday at 2 hours Universal. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room software. An announcement about the show, including information about the topic and the guest speaker, will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends List. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday, when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.